Good afternoon, Juno. It's 2:59, almost 3 p.m. on Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. It's time for a Juno Afternoon, another installment. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host. And today we're going to get an update on the Perseverance Theater's Three Plays with Alaska Themes Summerfest. We'll talk with Pat Race about his new map of downtown Juno. We'll find out about the new gallery in town, the Trickster Company, with guest Rico Worrell. And we'll talk with Travis Smith about Panhandle Provisions, Juno's newest restaurant. These guests, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more for Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native dog mushers in remote villages are breathing a collective sigh of relief as fishing restrictions are being relaxed on the Kuskokwim River. Mushers along the river feed their dogs fish because it's nutritious and inexpensive. But this year, because of restrictions, they got a late start. From KYUK, Charles Enoch has more.
Bethel musher John Simon's 2 dozen or so huskies eat at least 8 medium-sized salmon each day. That can include bony parts from the coveted king salmon.
I was worried about getting more fish for the dogs, because when we're fishing for kings, you know, we usually have heads and backbones, stuff like that, and we didn't have that this year.
That's because fish managers are trying to protect the dwindling king salmon population on the Kuskokwim by restricting most mesh nets. That means mushers like Simon have also been unable to catch chum salmon, also known as dog salmon, a main staple of a Kuskokwim sled dog's diet. 30 miles upriver in the village of Akiak, 16-time Iditarod racer Mike Williams Sr. in his native language says hardships are a part of a musher's life. Despite this year's setback, he says he and his family will continue to provide for the dogs.
If they have no food, then they will have no food, but we will gather scraps if we have to.
In nearby Guithluk, musher Max Olick says he'll rely more than ever on his community and his own money to get his team through the long winter.
We start to run short around spring, in April. These dogs have a tough appetite. The food can sustain them longer if you also use commercial dog food. This is more expensive, but all mushers around here know that food comes with a price, either in our store or down the river.
Back in Bethel, John Simon is planning on spending extra hours on the river to make up for last time.
Just gonna have to work harder. We work for our food. We work for our fish. Our ancestors did it. That's the way it is in our culture. You have to work for it. It's not going to be given to us.
Simon and the other mushers will get that chance. Fish managers have opened up the river now that the majority of kings have passed through. Now mushers will face a new race, a race to hang and dry enough chum and coho salmon to keep their team strong for the winter racing season. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Chinese art by Ai Weiwei recently made its way to the Navajo Nation through a collaborative land art installation. The project was filmed. And as Christine Trudeau reports, organizers hope the collaboration sets the tone to bring more contemporary art to the reservation.
The Pull of the Moon is the title of the first temporary art installation between Navajo artist Bert Ganelli and internationally recognized artist Ai Weiwei. Funded by a partnership between the Navajo Nation Museum, New Mexico Arts, and the International Land Sensitive Art Foundation, or ILSAF. Being unable to leave China due to Chinese government restriction, Ai Weiwei couldn't physically interact with the environment and therefore had to work closely with the Navajo Nation Museum, relaying information on the site and giving instructions on how to build his contribution to the installation. Navajo Nation Museum Director Manuelita Wheeler is excited for what the collaboration will generate, not only for the Navajo Nation, but other tribes as well.
There are many institutions around the United States that are about Native people, but they're not owned or run by Native people. So this is a great project where we invited outsiders in and hopefully make new roads within the world of contemporary art. Not just Native art, but it's going to make new roads for contemporary art in general.
The Pull of the Moon was recorded for a three-dimensional dome format, as well as documentary, which is set to be screened at the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico, starting July 16th. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Humboldt State University has a part-time, 3.5-year online Master of Social Work program emphasizing decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted from August 1 to begin in January. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Service.
3.05 p.m. Juneau afternoon, and my first guests are from the Perseverance Theater, and one of them is the artistic director for the theater. His name is Art Roach, and the other one is one of the actors that's taking a significant role in today's Summerfest discussion. He's part of one of the plays for Summerfest 14. Welcome, both of you. This is Ben Brown, and he plays Vanya in the play Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike.
That's
true. That sounds like Bob Carroll, Ted and Alice.
it's a very literal name that Mr. Durang, the playwright, chose to assign to the play. Just four character names, and he actually thinks it's really funny because Spike doesn't go with the other names. You're supposed to be able to use that old Sesame Street.
It sounds like the name of the dog.
That's right. He's not a dog. Yes,
close, but not quite.
Yeah, he's a scantily clad young man who bounds around the stage in his underwear a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'll be exciting for the people that are going to the play to see that one.
Yes.
All right. And Art, let's talk about the Summerfest schedule and the three plays that you are going to be premiering here very shortly.
Sure. Summerfest is three plays in a rotating schedule. So Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike was the first one that opened a few days ago, about a week ago. And then the world premiere of Warriors by Dave Hunsicker, Juno's own Dave Hunsicker, is a play about Native soldiers in different periods of time. So it takes you to Attu in 1943 and Baghdad in 2003 and various times before either of those. And then The Blue Bear, the adaptation of Lynn Schooler's book about Michio Hoshino and his relationship with Lynn when they were working as a guide and client in Southeast Alaska. So those are the three plays. They're all open now. They're the kind of plays that our audience see in the winter, but we're offering them in the summer. There are two things that are different. The schedule is rotating, so during a weekend, for example, you could see all three plays or pick the one that's most interesting to you, and the location is different. It's downtown at the Jack right here. We can see it out your window, actually, here from the KTOO studios.
Wow, how many people can we seat over there?
We have about 100 seats in there. One of the reasons to be in the Jack is to be closer to downtown, but another reason it's a bigger space, so the sets for the other plays are in back, so we move them back and forth. So that's that bigger space.
Well, that would make it a little easier because, you know, I know the Perseverance doesn't have a whole lot of, looks like storage space. There's nothing. It's kind of like everything's got to
what you see is where it is.
Yeah. Okay, and let's talk a little bit about the one that Ben Brown is in, who's playing Vanya and Sonia and Marcia. Masha and Spike. That'd be interesting if it was Marcia, but okay.
Masha is a little bit like a Marcia.
She's a little bit like a Marcia.
if by Marcia you meant Marcia Brady,
she's the older sister,
right. And she certainly likes having the attention focused on her all the time. She's an actress.
She's a little bossy.
But it's a really neat script. As listeners may have heard mentioned, it won the Tony Award last year in 2013 for the best new play. Christopher Durang is a very well liked and respected current modern American playwright. He's got a really unique sense of humor, and this play is different than anything else that he's written. I think he described it once as having taken a bunch of Chekhov's plays and having thrown them in the blender.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Chekhovian in a sense that it's not set in Russia while there's still, you know, a Tsarist Empire going on. I mean, it's set in Bucks County, Pennsylvania in the current day, and the characters are very real and fresh and American, but they've got some of the same existential conflicts and concerns about the meaning of life that Chekhov's characters had 100 years ago, I would say, including my character, Vanya. And I liked the script as soon as I read it, and I was thrilled to be able to, and continue to be thrilled to be able to be a part of the production.
Well, these sound like somewhat Russian names. You know, I don't know a whole lot of Russians in Pennsylvania. I know a bunch of Quakers and Pennsylvania Dutch, right. That's pretty much it.
The names all come from Chekhov's plays, so it's a theatrical pun, I suppose. And Chekhov wrote about families, so it's really a play about the American family, the American domestic situation, which is very funny. You don't need to know anything about Chekhov to enjoy the plays if you've had a brother or a sister or know anyone that did. Ever complained about their brother or sister, it's relatable for sure. And if you do know Chekhov, it adds another dimension to the play, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, but those jokes are not layered heavily on. They're just there for the taking if you happen to be able to take them.
Well, this sounds like the funniest of the three plays.
It is a very funny play, but it also has some sad moments as well. We've had really nice audience reactions, and I do think that people are looking to go to the theater for a laugh. We'll certainly get that in. I can
no doubt
guarantee that. And it's not just a slapstick story. You kind of have to see it to believe it. And I know that I think one thing we're facing as a challenge is that the Juno Theater goers are, first of all, not that accustomed to going to theater in the summer at Perseverance,
right.
And they're not accustomed to going to 6 p.m. shows on Monday and Tuesday. We had a pretty nice house last night. We have a 6 o'clock show for Vanya and Sonia Masha and Spike today. If you're not doing anything this evening, looking out the window again, I can tell you probably don't want to go walk the flume tonight or do anything else outdoors.
Yeah, gold pannons out, too.
Yeah, it's pretty moist out there. So this would be a great opportunity. And the lovely thing about 6 p.m. is you're home by 8:30, and so are we in the cast.
And you can go out to dinner, too. There's a new program called Double Date, so a number of restaurants are participating, and you'll get discounts on theater and food if you go out and bring your ticket stub to one of the restaurants on the list, or go to one of the restaurants on the list and bring your receipt back, your stamped receipt back to the theater. We'll give you a discount, too. So.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about who are the participating restaurants, because we want to give credit where credit is due.
I can't rattle them all off, but they are on they are all on the website at ptalaska.org. But I know that Saffron is on the list, and I believe the Rookery is on the list, and
the Baranoff is
certainly. All the restaurants in the Baranoff
are
participating.
Yep, that's the Gold Room.
Room.
I guess you could go to the Capitol Cafe because we have matinees.
That's right. You could go to breakfast and go see theater and participate in double date night. Yeah.
Okay, talk about a little bit about the Summer Flex Pass for anybody that's interested in seeing all three of them.
There's a couple ways to get this. If you're currently a Perseverance Theater subscriber, so if you subscribe to the last season or are subscribing to next season, there's a special rate for the Flex Pass. It gets you in three times. So the idea of three was there are three plays. You can see each one once, but Flex Passes are redeemable any way you like. You could come with two friends. You could come to the same play three times, really whatever you like. You can buy more than one Flex Pass and come six times or nine times or whatever multiplies by three that you like. And subscribers get the best deal, but the regular price for Flex Pass is $25 per admission, which is $5 off the full price of $30 each.
All right, and what about the pay-as-you-can?
Yes, that's exciting because Perseverance always has some pay-as-you-can shows. It shows over on the main stage. So this summer, just for the next couple of weeks, the matinee performances, stop me if I'm wrong, Art.
So far, you're good.
The matinee performances are pay-as-you-can for the next 2 weeks. So any of those 11 o'clock or 2 p.m., you know, basically anything that's during a daytime window, you can come and see those, and they are pay-as-you-can. That's as affordable and as approachable, and we'd like to make it that way so that folks of, you know, all circumstances are able to come and enjoy the theater. And so if that is something that you think may be good for you or someone you know, try to help get the word out that it's really easy to come, and it literally is, you know, whatever you think is an appropriate amount to donate.
The only thing to add is pay as you can with a local ID.
Yes.
And you could bring your guests. If you have visiting friends and family, they can come in, pay as you can with you, and it's for any curtain time before 6 o'clock, so the 2s and the 11s. Yeah. And let us know how you like that. If it's successful, maybe we'll figure out a way to extend it, but we want to make these plays accessible to everyone.
And if that's a more aggressive or ambitious pay-as-you-can program than we've had for regular shows over on the main stage.
Right.
So kind of a nice opportunity for people to be able to come and see a show.
All right, Ben, this is not your first play. Can you tell our listeners about a few of the others that you've been in?
Well, I was just most recently in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof over on the main stage. I played Dr. Baugh. My first play at Perseverance was back in 1996. I was Bernard in Death of a Salesman, directed by Perseverance Theater founder Molly Smith. So, and I've done many plays in between at Perseverance and at some other theater companies around the state as well. And I'm very grateful to be able to be a company member and to act at Perseverance. And one of the nice things is, you know, one of the actresses in our current cast of Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, it's her first show at Perseverance, Sylvia Kwan. And that's one of the neat things about Perseverance is that you're constantly meeting new people from all over the country, and that's one of the things I really value about the chance to work there as an actor.
Yeah, because I've seen you before. I just kind of wanted to see see how you felt about this role, you know, playing Vanya, whether this is, you know, a new favorite, or how does this compare to some of the other parts that you've played?
I like this play every bit as much as any other play that I've done. I think it's really well written. I like my cast. I love my cast. The director, Carolyn Howarth, was great to work with. I was actually at a play she directed a few years ago, The Importance of Being Earnest, over on the main stage. And I think it's great that Carolyn was able to come back and work with us on this. And I will say I'm very excited that we're taking this show up to Anchorage in September to perform in the Sydney Lawrence Theater at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. I hope we have really good houses up there. I think it's this is the first production of this show in Alaska, first in Juneau. Right. It'll be the first one in Anchorage. And I should also mention, if you're going to be in D.C. sometime next year, Molly is doing it at Arena Stage, but we got to it first at Perseverance. So right. Just before we went on the air, I was asking Art if we might get Molly in to see us. Her time in Alaska is so brief in the summer, mm-hmm. but I may send her a text message imploring her to drop by and see it if she can.
She'll appreciate that.
Even if she has to say
Art,
no.
Briefly, what were the logistics like in the construction of the sets and the transport?
Oh,
did you
goodness.
Build them at Perseverance and move them then to the Jack, or how did that work?
So Perseverance owns a shop out in Lemon Creek. We've had it for 5 or 6 years, and all of our sets are built there. In this case, because there were three of them, the guys built pieces there, moved them to the theater to paint, and then from there they were moved over to the Jack as the space was ready. And then in May, a raised area was put in, a deck was put in, some pipes were put in to hang lights from, and it's really quite a transformation of that space. It's kind of fun just to see the space set up differently than you usually see it. There's a lot of theatrical lighting and sound that went in to make them look good. And I'm really proud of the directors and designers and the production team, because each play looks very different and very complete. And that was not easy at all to do. But
that's what I was wondering about, because I know what the Perseverance setup looks like.
Right.
And I was like, how are they doing this next door here?
That's
rather unusual.
Tried to promise the audience the same quality of production, too, that you see at the theater. It's just in the summer and a rotating schedule. And I think that we delivered pretty well on that.
Ironically, it's almost like there's more space backstage at the Jack than there is over at the main stage building in Douglas.
There is.
It is a little, it's different. And I guess we're not giving backstage tours, but I can tell you it's been very exciting for everyone backstage as well, because it is new and different, and we're making it work, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, then. Remind everybody what the three plays are, and I will definitely say that they are concurrent. They're running right now, so you could get tickets tonight.
Indeed. You could come and see our show at 6 o'clock tonight, and we would love for you to do so.
Wednesdays are the day off, and the schedule is easiest to find by going to a new URL called PT Alaska, Perseverance Theater, ptalaska.org, and that URL will take you right to a schedule page where tickets are available. They're also available at the usual outlets, bookstores, online, 463-TIXS. You can walk up to the Jack and ask for tickets as well.
Okay, you covered everything I wanted to say about the end here. All right, Art Roche and Ben Brown, thank you very much for being our guests on a Juneau Afternoon today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
All right, and now I know it's not from a play, but this is called Bus Stop, and since it's raining out here, this is one of my favorite oldies. So here's the Hollies with Bus Stop.
Yeah.
That was The Hollies from 1966 with Bus Stop. An appropriate one for today because it's raining out there big time and there's wind, but no shine. All right, my next guest is Pat Race, and he's from Juneau, Alaska Robotics, and he's going to talk about the new downtown map that he's come up with. Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me in.
Oh, it's great to see you here, and let's talk a little bit about the concept for this.
Sure. What do you want to know?
How did you come up with the idea to do it this way? Because this is not exactly a traditional map.
Oh, I don't. I've seen a lot of great like cartoon maps. And growing up here in Juneau, when I was a kid, I helped my grandma out down at the tourist kiosk. It was in a different location, but it's the same kind of little octagon type structure down there. And they always handed out maps. And I remember I guess it was 1984. I have a copy of this. I picked it up at J&J's. There's a big poster map that got put out by a group that I don't even know if they're local or not, but it was called Fiesta Productions, and they did a giant cartoon map of all of Juneau and included a lot of places in the valley. And it was one of those maps that, like, the DBA does where they, get donations from businesses and they put them on the map. And it was a lot of fun, and I like those kind of things. I've been a big fan of illustrated maps. I guess a few years ago I traveled to Key West, and we were in this pirate museum. It was a museum full of sunken treasure, and there's a big map on the wall, and it had beautiful illustrations, and I thought, wow, I should just do my pirate map version of downtown Juneau. And so it's a little bit of cartoon map from the 80s mixed with map from the, I don't know, I guess 1600s or something like that.
Okay, this looks in design a lot similar to the Alaska Folk Festival posters that we've seen, especially like the last 2 years worth.
Oh yeah, probably influenced by a lot of other local artists. I mean, it's hard not to be.
All right. And was there anything new that has been added that hasn't been there previous? Like, it seems like you got most every place on here that's new.
Well, actually, I sat down to make this map when we first opened our gallery, which was about 2.5 years ago. So I sat down and drew all these places, and it was really just a list of probably 8 places I really wanted people to go to, and it was going to be our little secret network of cool stuff. And since then, I've had to sadly erase a lot of them, a lot of my favorite spots. I had to erase Paradise Cafe and Wild Oven's no longer open for the for public pickup, and Bee's Bakery is closed down. And so a lot of the places that I love downtown are
Right. I noticed that some of the newest ones are on here.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
you've got
yeah.
Grumpy's is on here, the Rockwell's on here, the Rookery's on here.
Yeah, I got Kindred Post and Trickster, our new neighbors over
right.
there.
Uh huh. Okay, and. Is this map being available to the public? How are we? Is it posted online, or are we just giving them out at Alaska Robotics? How is this being distributed?
I'm working on it. I walked around town and I handed out a bunch of copies to different businesses that wanted them. If someone out there wants a copy of this or a couple copies or a handful or a stack or whatever for their business to hand out, I'd be happy to drop them by, or you can come by the gallery and pick them up. I just printed about 500 of these, and I know that a lot of the other maps in town, they print thousands and thousands and thousands.
Yes, there are definitely thousands available.
So,
every day they're handing them out at the cruise docks.
Yeah, I mean, if the demand's there, I don't mind printing more. It's a little bit of a I tried to do it as an art project so that I've got flat prints of this. I've got like a $10 version and a $50 version, and I'm using that to kind of recoup my cost of printing.
One of the questions that came up.
Yeah, I didn't request money from anyone that's on this map. This is just kind of things that I don't know. This is sort of downtown in my brain, and I know there's already a couple of spots that I've left off and I'm hoping to make this an annual thing. So I'll add and remove places for next year and do kind of a 2015, 2016 as downtown evolves.
All right, Pat, are there going to be unfolded and larger size versions available, specifically like an 18x24 that can be framed?
Yeah, yes, absolutely, and they are available right now in our gallery. I have a limited edition of larger prints. I'm limited to 100 copies, and those are $50, and then I have a print that's the same size as this map but without the creases in it, and that's $10. And those are available at the Alaska Robotics Gallery.
All right. And are they going to be available like on the internet at like traveljuno.com or anything like that? Have you any plans for that?
That would be awesome. I haven't really talked to the Convention and Visitor Bureau. I might wander over there after I get off the radio. I don't know.
Okay.
This has been a pretty casual
it's
process.
It's still coming
for me.
About here.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the design in the margins, you have several small figures.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you, yeah, which ones? Okay, I was going to have you describe them on the air, which ones you put in there and why you put them there.
Well, let's see. I've got mostly it's ravens, and that's because that's they're just characters and they're downtown. I put in a couple bears here and there. There's some clamshells. It's all part of our landscape here. I've included some of the public art projects. I try to include places where you can go and find a public restroom. Mailboxes were important. I wanted people to be able to mail things and find, you know, not just a postal station, but drop boxes and things like that. People have suggested that maybe next year I should add Wi-Fi coverage on here. I haven't done that at all.
Oh, but, come on. There's enough Wi-Fi freeloaders out there already. You don't need to tell them where to go. They probably have already figured it out.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, and are there any hidden images in here? Do you got anything that's in here that people are going to be chuckling when they find?
Well, you know, there's nothing hidden if you look hard enough, right? But it's there's some little.
Yeah, I noticed the totem pole in the upper left with the, you know, the umbrella over top.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, that's necessary today. If not that, a rain slicker or something.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cute. I put that in there. I've got some little guys hiding out in the park here. Yeah, there's a porcupine wandering around.
Yeah, so definitely the things that if you studied the map long enough, you'd see a couple of things that are definitely going to make you laugh. Or there are a few good things that are hidden in this.
Yeah, it was a fun project, and I'm really excited about the results.
All right, and time for completion. How long did it take you from the time you conceived the project to this final version that you've got?
God, I think the best I can do is way too long.
Way too long. Yeah. Too much time on my hands.
It took a lot longer than I wanted it to, but I'm really happy with the results. It was just one of those projects that I sat down and started doing, and I realized I was way in over my head, and I had to just kind of keep going or else I'd never finish it. So it's something that I chipped away at. Every spring, I would do kind of a big push. So the first year, I did the border and a bunch of the businesses that aren't on here anymore, and then I realized it was halfway through the summer and it wasn't worth doing. And then the next spring I made a big push and did a bunch more little illustrations and then stopped. And then this year I just decided I needed to finish it. So.
All right. And anything else that you would like to add? Remind people again where they can get a copy because they can't get it online yet.
No, you can get it at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. And it's downtown at 220 Front Street.
All right. Well, Pat Race, this is a very interesting project. It's certainly different than any of the other maps that are being handed out downtown. And I wish you all the success with it and look forward to seeing the revisions to come up in the years ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks again for being our guest on the Juno Afternoon.
Yeah, no problem.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 8th of July, 2014. It's the birthday of the poet Jean de La Fontaine, born in Chateau Thierry in the Champagne region of France in 1621. Author of the famous Fables came out in 1668 through 1693, including The Tortoise and the Hare, The City Mouse and the Country Mouse, and The Goose that Laid the Golden Eggs. It was on this day, 1918, that Ernest Hemingway was wounded serving as a Red Cross ambulance driver in World War I in Italy. The following January, he went back to his parents' home in Oak Park, Illinois, recuperating from his injury, walked around with a cane, and found himself a small-town war hero. He was invited to come speak at schools and social clubs about his experience in the war. And he always took with him his blood-stained, shrapnel-torn trousers. The wound that he received would become the central event of his novel, A Farewell to Arms, which he considered his best book. And it's the birthday of the writer who said, God doesn't like crap in art. J.F. Powers, born in Jacksonville, Illinois, 1917, grew up Roman Catholic in a town of Protestants, 1943, he joined a retreat for priests at St. John's Abbey in Collegeville, Minnesota, and not long after, he wrote a story, Lions, Hearts, Leaping Does, which was published and which launched his literary career. J.F. Powers was determined to be an artist, to devote himself to his art. His father had been a piano prodigy who gave up his artistic dreams for an office job, and Powers refused to do the same. His first collection, Prince of Darkness, came out in 1947, sold very well, and in 1962 his novel Mort Durbin won the National Book Award. J.F. Powers, who said, I think it's possible to write something, for me to write something, that even God might like, not as a soul seeking salvation, but just as entertainment for God. This may be blasphemous to say, but I believe it. Here's a poem for today by Robert Kinsley, entitled Reunion. Here past the edge of town, this one as well as any other in the Adirondacks, the trees lock arms and lean into each other like relatives at a family reunion. This is some history. Listen to the name: sugar maple, black spruce, wild cherry, sweet birch, the old white oaks, on and on into the hillsides until my tongue rolls and I whisper Ohio, imagining this is what it was 100 years ago, imagining this is what whispered in the ear of Tecumseh, who fought for it for 20 years, knowing when he started he couldn't win, but who fought and lost anyway, imagining this is what whispered to my great-grandfather Marvin Peabody when he dropped down out of the Northeast, who left when he heard his neighbors unfolding the arms of trees with axes and bucksaws, and headed west, rubbing the fine dust from his eyes, but came back when he saw that, like Ohio, that too was lost. He came back, I suppose, because he had nowhere else to go. Or maybe he just liked the name Ohio. And why not whisper it now? Whisper, Ohio, Ohio, Ohio. And amid the miles of concrete, under the culverts dumping waste, around the smokestacks over by the river, a breeze picks up, sending a ripple like a litany through the family of trees. Reunion, a poem by Robert Kinsley from Endangered Species, published by Orchises Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Cufflinks and Pearls is coming soon. 6 p.m. July 26th at Jordan Creek Center. Come to a night in Monte Carlo with casino games, live and silent auctions, music, performing arts acts, and more. Hosted by Marty Duncan, celebrity chef from the Next Food Network star, with catering by Salt and Suwana Thai Cafe. Special ticket packages available through July 19th. Details at 586-9251. Brought to you by Ha'ani Community Development Fund.
3:34 p.m. in Juneau, and the Juneau afternoon continues with my next guest, Rico Worrell, and he's from Trickster Company, which is the new gallery in town. Hi, Rico. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good. Thanks.
All right. Tell everybody about Trickster Company.
Yeah. So it's sort of a company that I started a few years ago. I started off just doing skate decks, and recently we've just grown enough to be able to expand into a gallery. So.
All right, and I noticed that you had several designs for skateboards. They're basically Clinket designs. Can you tell a little bit about how that came about and who the artist is for the boards?
Yeah. When I did start out, it was just my own longboard that I painted for myself, and After that, I made one for my cousin and made one for a few other people that were interested and a few that were just for fun, and it sort of caught on, so I decided to start manufacturing them. So most of the boards are designed by myself, but I've just started to try and expand and work with other artists. I've got, in the shop now, I've got a longboard that I designed, as well as two regular skate decks. And the newest addition is a skate deck designed by Allison Bremner. She's from Yakutat. She's an amazing designer. And it's of it's an eagle design with a backdrop that has the Big Dipper.
Okay, so sort of the Alaska flag woven
right
into it too.
Yeah. She's playing with the idea that, you know, that the Alaskan homeland kind of thing, and the relationship between Native people and the land.
Okay, Rico. And how did the gallery come about? When did you start looking for space? When did you find what you're in now?
I guess the business has been growing pretty well since last year. Last year I did a Kickstarter campaign for my playing cards, and it was a successful Kickstarter campaign, and it really helped me feel validated in the idea that people were, you know, interested and ready for a very, you know, trying to use design in an innovative way and on new products. And so once I finished with the Kickstarter and shipped everything out, and that was probably maybe January when I finally got all of that squared away, there was still some momentum and energy around the brand. So I decided to start thinking about it, and it was, it probably wasn't until too late in the spring. If you notice, I opened halfway through the summer. It would have been helpful to open earlier, but, you know, I had to, I decided just to make it happen. And we had a preliminary opening last week, and I think we're going to try and have some kind of, you know, grand opening event maybe this Friday.
Right, Rico. And all the products produced locally, or is there anything that's coming in from elsewhere that you got in the gallery?
Yeah, they're all designed here locally or by artists that are from Southeast
right
Alaska.
I mean, you got to send playing cards out
right
to be done.
Exactly.
I mean, it's hard to cut them yourself and do everything.
Yeah, so I actually have the playing cards are made by a U.S. playing card company, so they're really nice cards. And I have, I work with various manufacturers around the country to manufacture the majority of the products that are in the shop, though.
And opening a business downtown, how tough was that?
I'm still exhausted.
he's still worn out. All right. And is it just you, or do you have a crew? Is there at least one other person that you've got that works with you? Because I noticed you're here.
Right.
I asked you, is somebody minding the shop? And you said, oh, yeah, somebody's minding the shop.
Yeah. My sister actually, she just recently graduated from the Institute of American Indian Arts. And this spring I asked her to come help me out, and it was very generously she decided to like come here and spend her entire summer helping me get started. And so she's helping me, as well as August Walker. He's another really amazing artist. Oh, so is my sister, by the way. I've got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of kind of groups and individuals in the community who've if not doing the grunt work, have helped me technically somehow or in many other ways.
All right, we've mentioned skateboard decks mm-hmm. and playing cards. Tell us about some of the other products that you have in the gallery.
Yeah, it's pretty general. I kind of get, I started out with just skate decks, but as a designer, I felt the need to expand and try other things. And so that just continues every day, you know, coming up with new ideas about what will be there. Right now I've got, you know, T-shirts and prints and jewelry. And I'm looking at doing another deck of cards that are exclusive to the shop. Right now, a lot of my products I do wholesale. So, the playing cards, you can find them at a number of shops in town. and same with a few other products. So I'm going to make a deck that's just exclusive to the shop. I've just ordered, you know, I'm restocking on my T-shirts now and ordering more stickers and lots of various things.
Okay, and you mentioned somebody from Yak Debt that's assisting you. Any chance we're going to see surfboards? Oh, come on.
That would be fun.
You know, come on. We could go that route there. Okay.
I think that's on the someday list.
Someday list, okay. Kayak paddles.
Kayak paddles would be, that would be fun, yeah. Maybe you'll add it to the someday list.
All right, so, but what other things do you have that are upcoming that you've already thought of? Those were two things that I came up with. And you are free to use those ideas. I mean, that's fine. Whatever you can do to get your stuff out there.
Right. Well, I've other than the deck of playing cards, I've got a few other surprise projects that are coming up, but I'm not ready to say what they are yet.
I'm not going to blow the lid off of that today.
Little things like, you know, I want to design a set of coasters, which would be a nice little thing with form line design on it. The other ones I'm excited about, but we'll have to keep a secret.
All right. And how did you come up with the company logo? Because I know you're wearing it on your shirt right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually it was Christine Ami Erickson came up with the logo. The logo, or we'll start with the name, Trickster Company, is Christy and I are good friends, and so we're hanging out and trying to figure out the name for what my skateboards were going to be called, since I was going to start manufacturing a line of them. It was sort of a natural name, you know, culturally relevant for both Northwest Coast Indigenous people as well as for people that are skaters. And the logo came about, I'm not sure how she came to it, but I remember she just kept emailing me. She's like, send me designs of this and this. And so I sent her these designs, and back came the logo, which is the full word Trickster Company, and the back of the R on the back of Trickster is the design of Raven transforming into the letter R. Raven is a trickster character, and he also has the capability to transform.
All right. Yeah, I knew a little bit of that from Tlingit mythology, or we want to call that history, or
right.
However we relate to that. All right, and let everybody know that you're on Facebook.
Yep.
Because that's how I found it and took a look at some of the stuff already.
Great.
All right, and where is your shop located?
My shop is at 224 Front Street, so that's right next to the movie theater downtown.
Can't miss that, right next to the movie theater. It's 20th century. Can't miss that building. All right, and your hours of operation are from when to when?
10 a.m. to 6 p.m.-ish. Sometimes the fun thing about the shop is I've got my studio set up in the back, so I may be working there later, and I will stay open later.
All right, and how has your business reaction been so far?
Good. I think people are excited for a design shop in Juneau. You know, both locals and even the tourists, when they walk in, they're like, oh, this is refreshing.
All right. Anything else that you want to add today?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, great. Well, Rico's Trickster Company is on Facebook, or you can go visit the shop if you would like. And hopefully there's a lot more innovative products and designs that are coming up. Anything to support something going on downtown besides a jewelry shop, because I think we got about 20 of them. Rico's looking at me and nodding his head. Yeah, we got too many of those. All right, Rico, thank you very much for being our guest on a Juneau afternoon today.
All right, thank you.
This is Bird Note. When nature writer and novelist Peter Matheson died in April of 2014, he left a rich and enduring body of work. Some of his earliest nature writing made clear his profound connection with birds. Matheson wrote, "The restlessness of shorebirds, their kinship with the distance and swift seasons, The wistful signal of their voices down the long coastlines of the world make them, for me, the most affecting of wild creatures. I think of them as birds of the wind, as wind birds. He felt that in this remarkable group of birds, we might sense intimations of our own mortality. Matheson drew attention to the sanderling, the small pale sandpiper we often see on summer beaches, a bird that makes a round trip of some 16,000 miles between Greenland and Chile. Again, he writes, one has only to consider the life force packed tight into that puff of feathers to lay the mind wide open to mysteries. The order of things, the why, and the beginning. As we contemplate the sanderling there by the shining sea, one question inevitably leads to another, and all questions come full circle to the questioner, paused momentarily in his own journey under the sun and sky.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, Sanibel to Siberia, the story of a World War II memorial, recounts the 1941 U.S.-Soviet Lend-Lease program. Native Report follows at 8:30, and at 9, Father Michael Alexa continues his series, Communicating Across Cultures. Then at 10, the Buffalo King profiles the rancher credited with saving the American bison from extinction. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
And my final guest in the studio today is Travis Smith from Panhandle Provisions, and we're going to talk about this. I was saying it like a new restaurant in town. It's actually a new deli in town.
Yeah. I'm also owner of the Rookery Cafe, and we've opened up a new business venture here just one block up the street from the cafe.
All right. And let's go into the Rookery first, because I don't think we've talked a little bit about this just before we went on the air. How long has the Rookery been open?
We've been open for business for about 3.5 years now, and we've been doing a full dinner service since January of last year. We just had some pretty good press. We had Ruth Reichel in town over the weekend, and her and some other food writer folks were in town and got a nice review from her. And we've been really just trying to focus on high-quality, fresh, local seafood and making as much stuff as we can from scratch.
Okay, and I think I'm probably speaking with some authority in that this is probably only a restaurant that serves kimchi here.
There might be a couple of restaurants that are, but
I don't know anybody else that's got that on their menu. But let's go a little bit over the Rookery's menu and tell us what kind of food you have on the menu.
Sure. Well, you know, we do a breakfast, a light breakfast throughout the week. We do a lunch 6 days a week, and then dinner 6 nights a week. The dinner menu changes a couple times a week. We like to keep it fresh and offer new fun combinations of food. But again, you know, we're really, because it is salmon season and seafood season, and we're located in the heart of the best seafood in the world, that's really what we're trying to focus on right now. There's usually some steak options. Right now we're also featuring items from Panhandle Provisions, so we have what we call our boards, and there's a charcuterie board, a cheese board, a pickle board. The pickles are things that we're making in-house. The cheeses are all cheeses that you'll be able to sample there on the platter and then go up to Panhandle and buy individually if you'd like. And the charcuterie board is currently meats that we are producing ourselves and that we intend to, as the licensing and business for Panhandle moves forward, we'll be selling our own cured meats and aged meats and sausages out of that store as well.
All right, Travis, so how are you producing that locally?
We make it in the kitchen. It's just a lot of effort, a lot of time. We've got a lot of quality folks. Bo Schooler, my business partner and our head chef, has been taking that aspect of the business on himself, and we're branching out into doing more things. We're making a lot of our own pickles. We're starting to make vinegars, just kind of really being, you know, as forward as we can in the food scene and trying to do as much as we can in-house.
Right, and how has it been with the Rookery as far as traffic goes? Doing better at some times than others, or?
Yeah, the business at the Rookery has been amazing. We have, I think, a very loyal following of folks who really appreciate the hard work and the quality that the food has been there since we opened up for dinner, you know, last summer. Our traffic has increased tremendously. We're in a good position to have good business during session. We're in a great spot here for the summer traffic, and we're just in a good spot for locals all around. They know where we are, right there on Seward Street.
How many guests can you seat at a time?
We currently seat about 46 people on a busy full night. When we do our course dinners, which we do one time or two times a month, where we have a wine or a beer paired dinner, we'll seat up to 48 for those.
I noticed the wine one was sold out.
Yeah, they tend to sell out every time. And speaking of, we have a beer dinner with Elysian Brewery.
Saw that coming up.
That's going to be on the 24th of this month. We'll probably start selling tickets within the next day or so. We're still waiting to hear on a couple of the beers to decide on what we'll be doing for the food end of the menu.
All right. How often do you have these special events, so like with the wine with food and the beer with
food? We try to do the paired dinners once a month. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall and the springtime, we were doing a second coursed dinner that wasn't necessarily paired with any alcohol. So we were doing one to two of them a month.
And as far as Panhandle Provisions goes, this is basically a deli. However, you know, you're selling, you know, products that you produce locally as well as other things that are, you know, just available for people to buy and take.
Yeah. So the inspiration for this came, we sent Bo over to Italy to do some training in February, and a lot of what he saw in a lot of spaces was really tiny little delis that served a wide variety of meats and cheeses and toppings and condiments and stuff like that. And we decided that, we also, one block up from the cafe, is a space that we built out for our bakery last fall, and we've been trying to decide what to do with this 400-square-foot street-side retail frontage, and decided after he returned from Italy that our best bet was to move forward with trying to have a little retail deli. So our goal for this space is to, we're importing cheeses from all over the world. We have a very wide selection of cured meats and salamis right now, stuff available from Salumi out of Seattle, stuff from Olympic Provisions and Chop from Portland. These are some very well-known American charcuterie makers. They're basically at the top of the game for what's happening on the West Coast, and it's accessible for us to get these products. So using that in conjunction with bringing in, we have lots of different types of vinegars and oils and just hard to find food items that go with the type of food that we serve at the Rookery, that go well with, you know, what we want people to be able to come in and, you know, grab a quarter pound of this cheese and a quarter pound of that meat and maybe a couple other antipasto items off of the shelf and be able to go put out a pretty good spread at their home or someone else's home for a dinner gathering or, you know, anything you could imagine, really. People seem to like good food, it seems.
All right. Are they going to be able to get deli sandwiches there or not?
Yes. Our lunch will be expanding here. We're kind of growing into that. Right now we were doing just kind of a sandwich of the day, but the goal is we're going to be producing our own ciabatta in addition to the focaccia that we make. And these sandwiches will be available as a grab-and-go item with the really high-quality meats and cheeses and pickles that we're making. Closer towards August or the end of August, we're going to be doing a traditional pizza by the slice, a pizza al taglio, which is a traditional Italian flatbread focaccia style dough topped with minimal quality ingredients, you know, so it's not going to be a 7-item pizza slice. We're going to have like some prosciutto and some nice cheeses and a simple olive oil.
Oh, I'll be really happy if you can get something close to authentic East Coast sausage, because that's, you know, that's the bomb. A lot of the sausage that is available on for toppings for pizza around here is like, yeah.
Well, we'll be doing as much as we can from scratch.
I was wondering about that as far as, you know, production for meats, as, you know, processing of sausage is probably something you guys got underway already.
It is. And as far as being able to sell processed meats from that space, we're just finishing up some paperwork with DEC to certify the space to do more meat work. One of our goals is to be able to be selling cuts of meat, bringing in cuts of meat that you can't really find anywhere else in town, selling some of our own dry-aged products, dry-aging some steak. We were serving dry-aged duck at the rookery for a little while, and very good response with that. And again, the space is small. We're located at 224 Seward, just one block up and across the street from the rookery. We currently have just a small selection of meats and cheeses in there and a widening selection of stuff on the shelf. We're also going to be packaging a lot of our own stuff out of the bakery, and we'll be selling the different loaves of bread that we're creating. And just, again, like we grew the rookery, trying to grow this space with as much home and house-created items as we can.
All right, and I'd like to remind everybody that both the rookery and Panhandle Provisions are on Facebook.
Yes, yep. We just got a Facebook page going for the Panhandle spot. If you do that, like it or subscribe to the feed, we'll be posting up when we get new items in there, letting folks know as the business moves along. We're intending to try to do some classes, have some pasta making classes, basically just let people come in and try things, and we'll be doing platters for kind of catered parties, and we're really, really excited about the potential for this space.
All right, Travis Smith, thank you very much for being our guest from Panhandle Provisions and the Rookery, and I wish you all the success with both of those.
All right, thanks, sir.
Now, this is, I couldn't find a song about delis, but I did find a Cheeseburger in Paradise song, so we're going to listen to a little bit of that. Cheeseburger in Paradise. That's not Jimmy Buffett's version. That's the Blues Rock. It's doing a bluesy version. So don't let it be said I don't play any blues every once in a while. All right, weather forecast. Tonight we're talking about numerous showers with lows around 50, southeast winds at 10 miles an hour, shifting to the southwest late. Tomorrow, rain is likely with highs around 60, southwest winds at 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and lows around 50 again. So we might be breaking out from underneath some of this. And you have been listening to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on the following translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay areas, you can tune to K276 AF 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in on 88.1 K201 AM. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871. KRNN is on 872. KXLL can be found at 873. I'm Ken Fix. I've been your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be with you tomorrow. Everybody take care. Have a great day. And here's All Things Considered.
it's a matter of making sure that we honor the humanitarian claims that some children might come forward with.
But the White House says...